KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Pearl Bakery, a bakery located in the Pearl District at 102 Northwest 9th Avenue. Pearl Bakery was founded locally in 1997, featuring artisan breads, pastries, and coffee. More information can be found at pearlbakery.com. Lunch was provided by Horse Brass Pub, located at 4534 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. Open from 11 to 2 a.m., serving British and pub grub. More information can be found at horsebrass.com. Dinner was provided by DiNicola's, located in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. DiNicola's authentic Italian restaurant has been a family-run Portland institution for over 40 years, serving Italian cuisine and pizza, open daily from 4 to 9 p.m. or later. For information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 4 o'clock in this hour is a discussion about beavers. We're going to be hearing from the author Ben Goldfarb, who wrote the book Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter, and another interview as well. So make sure you give us a call while you're listening to this fascinating conversation about beavers and all that they do actually for our climate. 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Sweet Creek Foods, family owned and operated in Elmira, Oregon, sourcing local organic ingredients and supporting Pacific Northwest farmers and fishermen, offering organic products including salsas, pickles, jams, tomato and enchilada sauces, and Oregon albacore tuna packaged in sustainable glass. More information, including product locator map, at sweetcreekfoods.com. And now, it's time for the Beaver Hour.
That sound you're hearing right now, that's the sound of a beaver chewing. My name is Althea Billings, and this hour, we will be talking climate change, beavers, and the people who believe in them. When I started working at KBOO about a month and a half ago, I became aware of Jenna Yokoyama's fascination with beavers and their potential to save the planet. So, for this News and Public Affairs Day, I decided to investigate our state mascot to see what all the fuss was about. First, I spoke to Ben Goldfarb, an environmental journalist and the author of the lauded book, Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. Tell me, how did you become interested in beavers?
Yeah, you know, I think like a lot of people who grow up hiking and camping and fishing, I always had some baseline beaver interest. I was certainly around them frequently and had some memorable beaver encounters. But it was really not until 2014 or so that I became a true beaver believer, as the people in the beaver cult call ourselves. I was living in Seattle, and I got a flyer for a beaver workshop being held. And I didn't know what a beaver workshop entailed, but I knew that I had to be there. And I ended up going to this thing, and it was just this amazing parade of biologists and ecologists and hydrologists talking about how valuable these remarkable rodents are and how many of our ecological problems, from water storage in the face of drought to salmon recovery to the improvement of water quality, could be addressed in some way through the restoration of beavers. So it was really that workshop that turned me from kind of a beaver agnostic into a true beaver believer.
Okay. So let's talk about your book. What would you say is flawed about our modern idea of a healthy landscape?
Yeah. You know, I think that our conception of what a stream should look like and how it should function really arose during a period where there were no beavers. You know, these were animals that were historically ubiquitous all over North America. There were as many as 400 million beavers when European colonists arrived on this continent. And fur trappers and traders set about eliminating nearly all of those animals. You know, we got down to 100,000 beavers or so by 1900, and they were nearly extinct in the lower 48. So, you know, as scientists began studying our rivers and streams in the, you know, kind of the early 20th century, they were really studying this post-beaver landscape, a country that had lost hundreds of millions of dam building, pond creating, ecosystem engineers. So in many ways, I think we internalized this concept of a straight, clean, free-flowing, fast-moving stream as natural, when historically so many of our streams would have been ponded in many places, would have been diverted into multi-channel braids by beavers, would have been much slower moving and had muddier bottoms in many places. You know, there would have been dead and dying trees all over the place. A stream with beavers is just a fundamentally different stream than one without them. And I think when we eliminated beavers from North America, or nearly did, we also eliminated our concept of what a healthy stream is. We need to re-beaver our imaginations in some ways.
I like that phrasing. So, I mean, more, maybe a little bit more specifically, what role do beavers play in river ecosystems, and what role might they play in habitat restoration?
Yeah, beavers play a tremendously important role in aquatic ecosystems. You know, we know, especially in the American West, where it's much drier than east of the Mississippi, you know, water is life, right? In many places in the West, wetlands are only 2% of the total land area, but they support 80% of the biodiversity. So any animal capable of effectively creating more water, creating more of these pond and wetland systems, has a really important role to play. Juvenile salmon really rely on beaver ponds and wetlands as rearing areas. All kinds of waterfowl use beaver ponds as nesting areas as well. You know, moose, mink, muskrat, all kinds of water-loving mammals are really reliant on beavers. Amphibians breed in beaver ponds. So there's this incredible menagerie of creatures that relies on beavers and would have been really harmed when beavers were trapped nearly to extinction.
You know, looking at habitat restoration, what kind of difference could, I guess, reinstalling beavers in these areas, would that be able to change the landscape?
Yeah, but potentially, you know, bringing beavers back is a thing that's already happening, right? There are already lots of projects around Oregon, Washington, California. You know, every Western state has some kind of beaver emphasis, and we're already seeing spectacular changes thanks to the return of this animal. You know, there are all kinds of amazing stories of streams that were once seasonal turning into perennial flows because beavers are slowing water down and keeping water in the stream longer. There are, you know, some fantastic studies from Central Oregon demonstrating that bringing beavers back can dramatically increase the survival of juvenile salmon. There are, you know, wonderful studies demonstrating their effect on water quality. So this process of returning beavers to American landscapes is already well underway, and there are countless cases of ecosystems, ranchers, you know, all kinds of different constituencies reaping the benefits of beavers.
Can you talk a little bit about what the importance is of slowing water down?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see where to begin that answer. So, you know, slowing water down is especially important as the climate changes, right? All over the West, you know, we're really reliant on snowpack for our water. You know, we need that snow gradually melting throughout the spring, summer, and fall to, you know, keep these nice, stable flows in our rivers and streams. But as the climate warms, more and more precipitation is falling as rain rather than snow. And when it falls as rain, it just runs off immediately, and we lose that nice kind of time release delivery of melting snow. So by slowing beaver or Sorry. So by slowing water down, beavers can simulate that effect to some extent, right? They're just keeping water in streams longer and making sure there's still water left over, come July, August, September. They're basically creating all of these little reservoirs up in the headwaters, slowing these streams down and compensating for our lack of snowpack.
Gotcha. So the subtitle of your book, Eager, describes beavers as having secret lives. What is meant by that?
My editor chose that. I think what's meant by the phrase secret lives is that here's an animal that for the better part of a century we've dismissed as a pest, right? There are all kinds of problems that beavers cause, or conflicts. You know, they clog up road culverts and irrigation ditches, they cut down people's fruit trees, they, you know, flood yards and fields. They're certainly challenging animals to live with, which is why in Oregon they're actually classified as predators against all biological logic. So to me, the notion of beavers having secret lives is the notion that despite the dominant narrative of them being a problem animal, they're actually this incredibly important species that has a vital role to play in helping us combat so many ecological problems, right? Their secret lives, those secret lives are the fact that they're out there 24/7 building dams, creating ponds and wetlands, helping us address drought and biodiversity loss and pollution, all without our appreciation and in many cases without our support or help.
So earlier you described yourself as a beaver believer. Can you tell me what exactly you mean by that?
I think a beaver believer is somebody who has looked at the scientific evidence and come to the conclusion that beavers are an incredibly valuable species in helping us tackle some of the problems we face. You know, a beaver believer is not some starry-eyed person who just puts blind faith in these animals, because there is this amazing body of peer-reviewed literature demonstrating how important these creatures are. So to me, a beaver believer is somebody whose faith in beavers is really grounded in scientific evidence and data, and has come to the realization that we need to bring these animals back if we're going to survive the 21st century.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to impart to our listeners today?
I would just say that the other point that I think is important to emphasize is just how important beavers are for salmon, right? I think there are lots of anglers and even fish biologists out there who consider beavers the enemy of salmon, right? We're trying to take dams out of rivers in the Northwest. Why would we want to put more dams back into rivers and streams? But obviously, beaver dams are nothing like human-built dams. Fish have no problem getting around or over them. And, these ponds and wetlands that beavers create are incredibly important habitat for juvenile salmon. So I like to emphasize that point, for a long time, I think that the fish constituency has held back beaver restoration, but now we're realizing just how important beavers are for salmon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me, Ben. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for giving me a call. I appreciate it.
And now it is time for you to give us a call at 877-500-5266 to become a member of KBOO right now. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Or you can also go online to kboo.fm/give. It only takes a minute to sign up there and become a member of KBOO today. And remember, if you can come in at the $5 a month level, we will send you a thank you gift of Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. I don't know about you. I mean, I know that Althea said at the beginning of that interview that, you know, I'm Jenna Yokoyama and that I am super into the beaver science. You know, join me in the beaver love. 877-500-5266. You know, when you listen to this interview, you know, Althea and I had joked, Althea, the news director, oh, beavers. And she said, oh, Jenna, why do you like beavers so much? And you heard in that interview why. Beaver science, right? It's connected to climate connection, how we restore our planet. It's a fascinating thing. We love beavers here in Oregon. Why not have that conversation on News and Public Affairs Day here? Show your support for programming that makes you think a little bit deeper than just, well, than just the conversations that are happening on the mainstream media, as we'll just call them that. Because this, although we say, haha, beavers, it's also a really serious discussion about what our climate is. Why has it become this way? What are the solutions? What are the radical solutions that we need to be looking at? These are the type of discussions that you enjoy hearing on your community radio station. Show your support. Be one of the invested listeners who actually put this type of programming on the air. 877-500-5266. Again, that phone number is 877-500-5266. Maybe you're a beaver believer. That's a good reason to call in. Maybe you're a beaver agnostic, or maybe you were a beaver agnostic and now you're a beaver believer. If you became a beaver believer in this last interview, give us a call. 877-500-5266. Remember, if you can come in at that $5 a month level, maybe you can come in a little bit more, but if you can come in at $5 a month, that's just $60 a year, we will thank you with a copy of Eager, The Surprising Secret Lives of Beavers and Why They Matter. Such a good animal. I love beavers. I just love beavers. Join me in my beaver love. 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. You know, something I learned in this interview was I did not know that beavers were the animal of Oregon. Who knew that? You know? So there we go. I'm an even bigger beaver believer. Join me, 877-500-5266. And now back to Hour of Beaver Time.
In my quest for beaver knowledge, I wanted to speak with someone with firsthand knowledge of beavers and their potential. That's where Jacob Shockey comes in. Jacob is a wildlife biologist, the owner of Beaver State Wildlife Solutions, and the restoration program manager at Applegate Partnership and Watershed Council. Let's talk about Beaver State Wildlife Solutions first. What do you do there?
So that company came about in my work. As a wildlife biologist, I spend a lot of time working to create functional habitat. And, you know, we use a lot of the typical grant funds from Oregon Lottery and private foundations. And these projects cost a lot of money. And we use big equipment to try to go out on the landscape and build habitat, specifically the habitat that's limiting often for animals that are imperiled. So like the coho salmon is one that I spend a lot of time on. And I started noticing, along with many, many folks across the region, that those spots with beaver were the healthiest spots, irregardless of what we were doing. And but with beaver come a whole suite of conflicts, especially when it's in that low gradient system in and around people. And so Beaver State Wildlife Solutions is really a company where we're trying to work on these sort of old wildlife conflicts that have often been solved with lethal control. This kind of treadmill of every time there's a problem, just trap out the animal. And we're kind of approach design and looking at the biology of the animals and trying to kind of find those happy spots where we can kind of coexist and both benefit in the same space.
Right. So what kind of conflicts do you see between beavers and humans?
So with beaver, they get themselves in trouble in sort of two ways. Beaver are our largest rodent in the state. They're also our state mammal. We're the only state with a second side to our flag, and beaver are on the other side of our flag, and they were sort of the original natural resource that was extracted out of our landscape, right before gold and before timber, people flooded into this land for the beaver pelts,
that could be made into, you know, the typical Abe Lincoln top hat that was in vogue. So beaver were originally sort of this natural resource that was greedily extracted from Oregon and across the West Coast. And then they kind of underwent a change in perception to sort of this nuisance species that would pop up and cut your trees or plug a road culvert. And that's really where they've been for the last, you know, maybe 80 or 100 years. They mate for life and have a little family unit, and they will often build dams and streams to try to flood the area so that they're safe from predation. Beaver are really prone to getting eaten by cougars, especially. And so they'll build these series of dams, and often those dams interface with human infrastructure, and that often gets beaver in trouble. You know, if you think of like a road culvert in a road base, it's like one perfectly good hole to dam and an otherwise great dam, and so they'll dam a culvert and the whole place floods and the beaver are happy and people freak out. So that's one of the things. The other thing is of course tree damage. Beaver are vegetarians, and so they eat a lot of aquatic plants and you know, forbs and grasses, but come fall, when a lot of the herbaceous plants are going dormant, they move to trees and shrubs, and they'll often eat people's ornamental trees and shrubs, and that gets people pretty upset too. So a lot of what I do is sort of walking areas where beaver are living in close proximity with people and trying to empower folks to make a plan to outsmart the beaver on the spots that you know, they're having a conflict. And a lot of times the knee-jerk reaction is just to trap the beaver out, right, if you're having a problem. And it doesn't really matter if it's lethal trapping or live trapping and moving the beaver, because beaver are territorial animals, they'll probably be back. You're just kind of opening up a little spot for a new family to move in. And so people get really frustrated about beaver conflicts, because it seems like, you know, every time they turn around, there's another problem. But there's been this wave recently toward looking at the positive benefits of beaver on the landscape. And so I think that's really starting to drive folks to sort of changing how we interact with them.
Right. And you mentioned that often, you know, without intervention, the conflicts between beavers and humans are usually resolved lethally. So what do you do to solve them as an alternative?
So there's a suite of things you can do for flooding. You can build little devices. They're kind of known as flow devices, is the term folks are using. Another term that's bandied about is beaver deceiver or beaver baffler, and these really just take advantage of the beaver's biology to trick them into thinking that that there's no need to dam, or into hiding a leak in their pond that they can't find. And so there's various solutions for, you know, if you've got a culvert that's plugged, or you've got a beaver dam that's starting to get too tall and starting to flood something. But you can build these relatively cheap and easy hacks, if you will, to work around the beaver's flooding. And then for trees, it's just super simple. There's sort of two strategies. You can either wrap a tree in welded wire, or you can paint it with a mixture of latex paint and clean dry sand. The sanding and painting is probably my favorite, because you can match the tree's bark and it kind of blends into the landscape, and the beaver will come through and they're testing the trees to see what's tasty and what they're looking to fall next. And when they bite into that sand and that paint, it dissuades them often from cutting that tree. So there's a bunch of kind of pretty low tech solutions to coexisting on a site. And the cool thing is, once you kind of look over the whole, all the issues on the site and make a plan, because they're, because they mate for life and they're territorial, and you can pretty quickly come to a stable point with the colony you've got living in your neighborhood, and then everyone can work together for years to come.
Well, you are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we are in the second to last day of our fall drive. So for those who are waiting to the end of the drive to give us a call, this moment is for you, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Or you can go onto our website at kboo.fm. It only takes 2 minutes to give us a call and sign up and become a member of KBOO today. So right now, might as well give us a call here on News and Public Affairs Day, where from 8 a.m. all the way until the news at 5, we are focusing on bringing you interviews and discussions about the climate crisis. It started off this morning at 8 a.m. with an interview with Naomi Klein and is wrapping up here today with an interview about beavers. Beavers, everyone! Apparently, they're on the flag of Oregon. I did not know this. I am someone who is not so good at the flags and the flowers and the animals. And so this is why I... What is the main flower of Oregon? I don't know. This is why I tune into KBOO, because I bet there will be a show that'll let me know. And so today on KBOO, I learned what our state animal is. Oh my goodness, I should call and thank KBOO. 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. I know that when I listen to KBOO Community Radio, I always find out something unexpected, and I always think, oh, beavers, okay. And then I hear an interview like this, and I think, oh my gosh, well, that is fascinating. Well, why isn't that the state animal of every state? And why aren't beavers everywhere? Well, now we know why, because we are learning all about it here on this interview here on KBOO Community Radio. If you can come in on, say, the $5 a month level, we will thank you with all sorts of stuff here at KBOO. We have that book, Eager. We also have our black beanie. There's so many ways to show that you support KBOO and the way we thank you. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. It's News and Public Affairs Day here on KBOO. Woo! One of our favorite days, always during the drives. We always bring you one day where we bring you nothing but news and public affairs to talk about the issues that matter to you, that are the issues that you say, hey, I want everyone in my community to know about this, and I want to hear from the people who are affected by these issues and the people who are leading us to those solutions and the people who are challenging the way we think about what solutions are. And yeah, we joke, oh, beavers, but at the same time, we know that we are actually bringing you the type of programming that is bringing you something deeper than just saying, isn't a beaver cute? We're saying, isn't a beaver a part of our ecosystem? Isn't this something important for you to be part of? Show your support for the type of programming that makes you go, oh, 877-500-5266. Now let's get back to learning more about beavers.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty. What can beavers do to help address the impacts of climate change? So if we were to see like radical restoration of beaver habitat, what would that look like?
That's a great question. I know folks who work their whole careers on how do we recover, you know, endangered salmon populations, and they will tell you that if we just had beaver out on the landscape in a big, meaningful way, you know, these fish could probably be delisted. Like, it would be all the difference in the world. So getting there, it's, I think it's relatively easy, if we put our minds to it. You know, we're a very smart, capable species, and beaver, you know, while they do amazing work, are pretty simple and pretty easy to work with, because they're driven by only a couple of things. You know, they need enough food, they need enough water, and so if you start on that basis, right, and you look out at a landscape and you're like, okay, how could we get beaver back in mass, it's really looking at what does the landscape look like now intrinsically. Biologists like this term, intrinsic potential, right? And it's kind of meaning like, regardless of what humans have done, what does the landscape look like, and would that be good habitat if we were to bring the, you know, the trees or what have you, you know, the water back to this place? And so looking at the intrinsic potential for beaver across the landscape, looking at, you know, where are the low gradient streams with the wide valleys that would have used to been completely you know, covered and beaver in there and their habitat, then we can walk out into those places and say, okay, you know, if there aren't beaver here now, why is that? Is it because we've cut all the trees down to farm right to the edge of the stream, and maybe just planting a strip of trees will be enough to bring them in? Or is it because we're diverting all the water and there's no water left in the stream, and maybe if we just allowed, you know, a couple CFS to flow through here, CFS is cubic feet per second. It's kind of what irrigators use as their measure of water. You know, then maybe that's the limiting factor for beaver. And all these things we've been doing for the last decade to experiment with bringing beaver back in have worked. And so I think that next step, if we're going to talk about, you know, what's radical restoration look like, I think it looks like looking at those streams that used to have beaver and setting the table for them to show up again. I think it's really just that simple. The cool thing about beaver too, you know, with climate change, so many of the solutions are so expensive and there's so much fear of inaction. With beaver, they're out there quietly doing it as we speak. And really all that it takes is us to, you know, when we start having a conflict that would otherwise result in us wiping them out of that landscape, it just takes us taking a step back and saying, okay, well, we can think this through. How can we work with them here? And it's a pretty low lift for a lot of return.
Right.
So there's like a last piece of that, I suppose, and that is, you know, the fact that we've classified them as a predator.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Well, it's actually a state ordinance, and it's kind of housed in Oregon Department of Agriculture, and it has to do with their classification as all rodents. The predatory classification gives basically, you know, full rein ability to control that animal. You know, even though they're this keystone species in our state mammal, they enjoy, you know, very, very little protection. No protection on private land as a predator. And on public land, they're a fur bearer. But there's no beaver management plan. There's no bag limit for how many beaver you can trap off public land. And so, you know, from the point of view of somebody spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to create a fraction of what beaver are doing for free, it can be really frustrating to watch these landscapes that beaver are maintaining just fall apart when someone's come through and trapped off the colony.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting that they are predators, not because of, you know, that their classification of predators has to do less with how they behave and more with how they impact humans.
Yep, it's just a convenient way of talking about them, you know.
Right. So you addressed a little bit how they could help address climate change and as we confront the climate crisis. Can you tell me just a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, when we think about climate change or global weirding or however you want to phrase it, we're looking at a system that's not behaving in the way that we have come to expect, and sometimes that means more water, sometimes that means less water, and it means that if you're going to have ecosystems that persist, they have to be resilient to that variation. And so building ecosystem resiliency is really, you know, one of the things that we need to be focusing on if we're putting ourselves in the place of, okay, as the humans we're going to try to do something about this, then that's one of the things that we can do that's the most effective is just allowing those elements to come back into play, like beaver that really builds a resilient ecosystem, you know, that and they're doing that through, you know, retaining water on the landscape and growing the margin of habitat into something that's just exponentially larger, so you just have so much more production of, you know, coho or whomever that is struggling to deal with the effects of climate change. You know, if we want to get reductionist about it, wetlands are one of the absolute most effective ways of storing carbon on land. And so just through that lens, encouraging beaver on a landscape to be freely sequestering carbon across the landscape is kind of a no-brainer. There's that piece too. Like if you want to have the carbon conversation, beaver come right up as well. If you want to have the water conversation, beaver are right there. And so I think that's why you're starting to see a groundswell of support for beaver. It's that rare beacon of hope in what's otherwise a pretty depressing conversation, you know, where you realize like, oh, there's another creature out there that purposely builds things and changes the ecosystem, and the result of that activity could mean that we have a healthier planet going forward.
That was Jacob Shockey, wildlife biologist and beaver expert. To sum everything up, beavers may indeed be the answer for habitat restoration and resilience in the face of climate change. Our understanding of how streams should look has been fundamentally flawed because we came to understand the landscape after fur trappers had decimated the beaver population. Beavers create resilient habitats which enable vulnerable species like salmon to survive. Their dams slow the flow of rivers to the ocean, which means where we used to rely on snowpack to slowly release water over the summer, beavers and their dams may play the same role going forward. I have been Althea Billings, and thank you for listening to these Beaver Believers.
Oh my goodness. What amazing programming about beavers. And this is Jenna Yokoyama, the Public Affairs Director here at KBOO Community Radio. And in case you didn't know, I love the science of beavers, so this is fascinating for me to be listening to this interview. I hope you are sucked in too. Show your support for this type of programming, 877-500-5266. That's right. Give us a call to become a member of KBOO right now, 877-500-5266. And I hope you can consider coming in at that $5 a month level. It's only $60 a year. And if you can do that, we will thank you with a copy of Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. And that's by author Ben Goldfarb, who you heard in the first part of the interview here in the 4 o'clock hour. Get a copy of that, 877-500-5266, or you can go on to our website at kboo.fm, or even another way, if you're listening through the mobile app, just go ahead and hit that donate button to become a member of KBOO today. I'm a fan of beavers. I hope you are now a beaver believer. This is the type of programming that you want to be hearing on KBOO. You know, it's I've always loved about KBOO is that when I turn it on, I'm always like, what's going to be on? What kind of really fascinating interview is going to be challenging the way I think? Well, I know that when I first heard about beavers, I just thought they were cute. I thought they were just, oh, you know, something that sort of lived out in the environment. But me, a suburban kid, didn't really understand how much beavers actually do for our ecosystem. And these are the types of interviews that tell you, hey, here's what it does. Here's why just restoring beavers can actually restore the salmon. Hello, let's talk about solutions. Yes, solutions, nature's solutions. Give us a call. Get a copy of that book. Learn more about beavers from Eager, The Surprising Secrets of Beavers and Why They Matter. Just come in at that $5 a month here at KBOO Community Radio, 877-500-5266. Again, that number is 877-500-5266, because I hope you don't just believe in beavers. I hope you also believe in the power of community radio, and you believe in the power of putting the mic into people's hands and saying, let's talk about what matters to you. Let's talk about what matters to our local you. That's right. And we're always talking about local, local, local here on KBOO Community Radio. And what's more local than talking about beavers, our own state animal? Coming up in this next part, as you heard, we're going to be talking about how beavers have shaped the landscape. So while you're listening to that, give us a call, 877-500-5266.
Now let's jump back into my conversation with wildlife biologist and beaver expert Jacob Shockey. So in your work, do you encounter a lot of misconceptions about beavers?
Yeah, one of the big ones is, for whatever reason, in Narnia, the beaver serve fish for lunch, and beaver are vegetarians, or I guess vegans rather, and so they don't eat fish. That's one of the common funny ones, and you can see why people would be confused, because the state of Oregon has actually classified beaver as a predatory species, so it's our only vegan predator according to the state of Oregon. And that predatory classification means that it's really easy to trap, shoot, or otherwise kill beaver really any time of year on private lands without any sort of permit or guidance, which has been rough on the beaver, and especially rough on trying to, you know, retain what they're doing on the landscape. People are, you know, and they're kind of, you know, they're big animals. They're 60-pound animals with yellow teeth, and so sometimes people feel concerned about having wildlife like that in proximity with dense urban populations. But in reality, they're one of the more docile animals I've ever worked around, and just kind of bring joy to the neighborhoods that they're in. Another common misconception that's still very much heard is that beaver dams block fish passage. So, you know, we've got a whole suite of native fish that are moving up and down our streams all the time, and there was a concern for a really long time that beaver dams blocked the movement of that fish, and people would actually go dynamite beaver dams just to try to help fish get through.
Whoa.
It really just takes sort of rocking back on your heels and thinking about it in context to realize that can't be true, because, you know, I live in rural Oregon, and you know, the old timers around here tell stories of fishing with pitchforks, because the fish were so thick that you could just stab your pitchfork in the water and come out with fish. Those are the same stories that exist from a time when people talk about streams as not these free-flowing, you know, babbling brooks that you see in a fly fishing catalog. They were the necklace of slow-moving beaver ponds, you know, one pond after another, complicated little streams and channels branching out and coming back together. And that was a paradise for salmon habitat that beavers created. And so they kind of went hand in hand for thousands and thousands of years. So that's another big common misconception. And especially as beavers start to make their way back into areas of Canada or Europe, where people haven't seen beaver in a long time, I think that's one that folks still run up against. So those are probably the two biggest ones. The rest just kind of comes from simplistic thinking about it. You know, beaver create really complicated habitat, and there's a lot of good science starting to quantify, like, this little piece of it or that little piece of it. But sometimes it's hard to just wrap your head around what a functioning ecosystem looks like. So, for example, people are really concerned about, you know, what about mosquitoes, right? Don't those dams create perfect mosquito breeding grounds? And to some extent, I mean, they're creating definitely more still water, but they're also creating wonderful habitat for all the things that eat mosquitoes in the aquatic system. And they're also probably flooding out a couple trees that are going to die, and the bark is starting to slough off those trees, and then you get, you know, epic bat houses suspended right above that body of water. And so the cool thing about working in beaver habitat is that everything works so well once that key piece is put back in the system.
Right, there's not a natural imbalance if beavers are in the picture.
Right, exactly.
So what is the benefit of beaver-human coexistence? I mean, we've talked about that a little bit, but...
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things that, you know, you can make a fuzzy environmental argument about animal welfare or about the habitat for the rest of the wildlife. You can make a financial argument that, you know, especially many counties and road departments are pretty responsive to. There's been a couple papers that folks have done looking at just how much money you save through putting in flow devices and sort of stabilizing the situation with beaver. You know, a flow device costs around $3,500 to install, and a plugged culvert that floods on a stormy day and washes out part of a road and you have to have flaggers and equipment costs a lot more than that. And even trapping them every year for the decade that flow device is in place racks up so many more invoices than just kind of stabilizing the situation for one, you know, once and for all, if you will. So there's that piece too. And then I think as we struggle, especially in my area, we've been really struggling with depleted snowpacks. The rain is coming at different times of year and it's moving through our creeks fast, and we're left with creeks that are drying up in the end of the summer when that snowpack would have been feeding those creeks longer into the summertime. And so beaver really can really serve an important function for us when we start talking about water security, when we start talking about how do we retain that water, you know, that's draining out of our mountains faster.
Okay, so have I convinced you yet that beavers are just like the greatest animal of all time? Well, if I have, give me a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Come join me in being a beaver believer and a supporter of community radio. And also, we have some people to thank who apparently also believe in community radio. Maybe they believe in beavers, or maybe they were just inspired by the awesome programming. So we have to thank Carla, who's a new monthly member. Thank you, Carla. We also have Samia from Salem and Barbara. Let's just do that. We got to do all the claps and stuff like that. And then Christina, who updated their monthly from, let's just say it, Beaverton. Ayo! Okay. I just realized that we have a Beaverton. I forgot. So I'm going to put another challenge out. We're going to put a challenge in to say, even though we have one person who have called from Beaverton, since this is the Beaver Hour, let's get another call from Beaverton, okay? Beaverton, show your namesake. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or you can go online to kboo.fm and you can sign up there. And guess what? We'll see that you're from Beaverton too. So, Beaverton people, you know that you're very excited to hear about what your city is named after. I mean, I'm imagining now that Beaverton is just a whole town of just beavers saving the world, having salmon just jumping everywhere and having beautiful greenery and streams that are just flowing and shaping the landscape, because that's what we learned that they do in this interview today. Fascinating conversation. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Become a member. And remember, if you can come in at that $5 a month, we will thank you with the Eager book. It tells you all about why beavers matter. It's actually an award-winning book, and it's a fascinating read. And it tells you all about why we need to just not say, oh, that's our state animal. And hey, look, it's on both sides of the flag. How cute is it? It's actually, no. Why should we put our effort? Why should we put our learning? Why should we put our listening into realizing why beavers are here to help save the planet from us, from our climate crisis? So learn more about that. And also realize you learned more about that by listening to community radio, to your community radio station. Give us a call and show us your support and show us what type of programming you want to be listening to. You want to be listening to the type of programming that challenges you. And I think this interview kind of does. It challenges our belief that beavers are just something cute. No, they are something that we should be realizing are an important part of this discussion of the climate crisis. 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Show your support for community radio right now. Mm-hmm.
let's get into the nitty-gritty. What can beavers do to help address the impacts of climate change? So if we were to see like radical restoration of beaver habitat, what would that look like?
That's a great question. I know folks who worked their whole careers on how do we recover, you know, endangered salmon populations, and they will tell you that if we just had beaver out on the landscape in a big, meaningful way, you know, these fish could probably be delisted. Like, it would be all the difference in the world. So getting there, I think it's relatively easy if we put our minds to it. You know, we're a very smart, capable species, and beaver, you know, while they do amazing work, are pretty simple and pretty easy to work with, because they're driven by only a couple of things. You know, they need enough food, they need enough water, and so if you start on that basis, right, and you look out at a landscape and you're like, okay, how could we get beaver back in mass? It's really looking at what does the landscape look like now intrinsically. Biologists like this term, intrinsic potential, right? And it's kind of meaning like, regardless of what humans have done, what does the landscape look like, and would that be good habitat if we were to bring the trees or what have you, you know, the water back to this place? And so looking at the intrinsic potential for beaver across the landscape, looking at, you know, where are the low gradient streams with the wide valleys that would have used to been completely covered in beaver and their habitat, then we can walk out into those places and say, okay, you know, if there aren't beaver here now, why is that? Is it because we've cut all the trees down to farm right to the edge of the stream, and maybe just planting a strip of trees will be enough to bring them in? Or is it because we're diverting all the water and there's no water left in the stream, and maybe if we just allowed, you know, a couple CFS to flow through here? CFS is cubic feet per second. It's kind of what irrigators use as their measure of water. Then maybe that's the limiting factor for beaver. And then, and all these things we've been doing for the last decade to experiment with bringing beaver back in have worked. And so I think that next step, if we're going to talk about, you know, what's radical restoration look like, I think it looks like looking at those streams that used to have beaver and setting the table for them to show up again. I think it's really just that simple. The cool thing about beaver too, you know, with climate change, so many of the solutions are so expensive and there's so much fear of inaction. With beaver, they're out there quietly doing it as we speak. And really all that it takes is us to, you know, when we start having a conflict that would otherwise result in us wiping them out of that landscape, it just takes us taking a step back and saying, okay, well, we can think this through. How can we work with them here? And it's a pretty low lift for a lot of return.
Right.
So there's like a last piece of that, I suppose. And that is, you know, the fact that we've classified them as a predator.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, it's actually a state ordinance, and it's kind of housed in Oregon Department of Agriculture. And it has to do with their classification as all rodents. The predatory classification gives basically, you know, full rein ability to control that animal. You know, even though they're this keystone species in our state mammal, they enjoy, you know, very, very little protection. No protection on private land as a predator. And on public land, they're a fur bearer. But there's no beaver management plan. There's no bag limit for how many beaver you can trap off public land. And so, you know, from the point of view of somebody spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to create a fraction of what beaver are doing for free, it can be really frustrating to watch these landscapes that beaver are maintaining just fall apart when someone's come through and trapped off the colony.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting that they are predators, not because of, you know, that their classification of predators has to do less with how they behave and more with how they impact humans.
Yep, it's just a convenient way of talking about them, you know.
Right. So you addressed a little bit how they could help address climate change, and as we confront the climate crisis, can you tell me just a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, when we think about climate change or global weirding or however you want to phrase it, we're looking at a system that's not behaving in the way that we have come to expect, and sometimes that means more water, sometimes that means less water, and it means that if you're going to have ecosystems that persist, they have to be resilient to that variation. And so building ecosystem resiliency is really, you know, one of the things that we need to be focusing on if we're putting ourselves in the place of, okay, as the humans, we're going to try to do something about this, then that's one of the things that we can do that's the most effective, is just allowing those elements to come back into play, like beaver that really builds a resilient ecosystem, you know, that and they're doing that through, you know, retaining water on the landscape and growing the margin of habitat into something that's just exponentially larger. So you just have so much more production of, you know, coho or whomever that is struggling to deal with the effects of climate change. You know, if we want to get reductionist about it, wetlands are one of the absolute most effective ways of storing carbon on land. And so just through that lens, encouraging beaver on a landscape to be freely sequestering carbon across the landscape is kind of a no-brainer. There's that piece too. Like if you want to have the carbon conversation, beaver come right up as well. If you want to have the water conversation, beaver are right there. And so I think that's why you're starting to see a groundswell of support for beaver. It's that rare beacon of hope in what's otherwise a pretty depressing conversation, you know, where you realize like, oh, there's another creature out there that purposely builds things and changes the ecosystem, and the result of that activity could mean that we have a healthier planet going forward.
That was Jacob Shockey, wildlife biologist and beaver expert. To sum everything up, beavers may indeed be the answer for habitat restoration and resilience in the face of climate change. Our understanding of how streams should look has been fundamentally flawed because we came to understand the landscape after fur trappers had decimated the beaver population. Beavers create resilient habitats which enable vulnerable species like salmon to survive. Their dams slow the flow of rivers to the ocean, which means where we used to rely on snowpack to slowly release water over the summer, beavers and their dams may play the same role going forward. I've been Althea Billings, and thank you for listening to these Beaver Believers.
We are listening to KBOO Community Radio in the last couple days of our fall membership drive. Become a member. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that number is 877-500-5266. Or you can always become a member online at kboo.fm. And in this last little pitch here, remember that if you can come in at that $5 a month or $60 a year, we will thank you with that book, Eager, The Secret Lives of Beavers and Why They Matter. Such a fascinating conversation. Show your support for this type of programming that is outside of the box. 877-500-5266. Again, that number is 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Flamenco Syndrome on Friday, September 27th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Flamenco Syndrome is a documentary film focusing on international flamenco, which reflects on how to sing and dance to the songs of others and in the process reveal one's essence. Again, that's Flamenco Syndrome on Friday, September 27th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Maybe we would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Pearl Bakery, a bakery located in the Pearl District at 102 Northwest 9th Avenue. Pearl Bakery was founded locally in 1997, featuring artisan breads, pastries, and coffee. More information can be found at pearlbakery.com. Lunch was provided by Horse Brass Pub, located at 4534 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. Open from 11 to 2 a.m., serving British and pub grub. More information can be found at horsebrass.com. Dinner was provided by Di Nicola's, located in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. Di Nicola's authentic Italian restaurant has been a family-run Portland institution for over 40 years, serving Italian cuisine and pizza, open daily from 4 to 9 p.m. or later. For information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
That's right. You can go to kboo.fm, click on the donate button, become a member today, or call that number, 877-500-5266. What's that number again? Oh, it's 877-500-5266. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. It is our fall membership drive, and today is News and PA Day. Coming up next on KBOO is the KBOO Evening News, a volunteer-produced news program that is supported by your membership. So call that number, 877-500-5266. Keep great stuff like this on the air in Portland and all over the world.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Membership Drive special of the KBOO Evening News.